And it was completely unnecessary for him to pull out all of his teeth.
He enjoyed it. He was itching. He wanted those abominable teeth.
But like,
he's
that's
like,
also,
I want to be a dentist.
Is that not the same as like fucking declawing your cat?
Oh my.
It's so fucked up.
It's so fucked up.
He declawed the abominable snowman.
And he enjoyed it. You know he was like relishing pulling out that poor Bumble's teeth.
Also, the worst part of it is that like, okay, so like we're having this whole conversation about Hermie, and I would love to have every conversation about Hermie, the little gay elf from the Island of Misfit Toys. But no one is ever gonna have this type of conversation about Rudolph. And that's because sidekicks are more interesting. Hi, welcome to the mini-sode. We'll be talking about sidekicks.
Sidekicks, the lesser known, lesser loved, but oh, so much more interesting bits of media. So interesting, in fact, that they have more or less about a gazillion sub-tropes.
Yeah, so what we're gonna do, I have the sidekick list on TV Tropes open, and I have sorted all of the subtypes into a list of 57 subtypes. And Annalie is gonna roll a die, and we're gonna just talk about a few.
Can I say, I am so excited for this mini-sode. I've got about a million hard opinions, and my first one will be specifically for number 34.
Number 34. That's platonic life partners! Whoopsie! Alright, right off the bat, us.
It's true. God.
Sherlock Holmes and John Watson, Dale Cooper and Harry Truman.
Yes, okay. Platonic life partners. So
okay, so basically when two characters have been friends for a long time, share a closeness like that of a married couple. Occasionally there are individuals who assume the duo are married or dating or try and set them up. However, the duo is perfectly happy just being friends and lack of sexual attraction is mutual.
Yes, okay, and here's the thing. I am curious to hear your thoughts on Sherlock Holmes and John Watson.
Okay, so first of all, I do think they're gay for each other. However, they're always portrayed just as platonic life partners.
Here's the thing, though. I think that it depends on the iteration.
That's very fair.
I think that in the novels, they are, they're absolutely gay for each other.
Yeah!
In the TV show, they have that scene of Irene and John talking.
Oh my
and
god.
He's just like, I'm not actually gay. And she's like, well, I am. And
yeah.
It's like, that's interesting how there is like one exception. But otherwise, I like seeing Sherlock Holmes as an ace character.
That's very true. Yeah.
But romantically gay, you know?
I'm 100% with you there. I'm in that same boat. And the same as the other thing I referenced was Dale Cooper and Harry Truman in Twin Peaks, where in the show, they are very not together. However, Come on. But I think Dale Cooper is also in that category of like, that man is romantically a big old gay boy, but I don't think he wants to bone down. I don't think that's his MO.
Yeah.
I think he's tried it out of professional curiosity. Like, I think he's like done the thing and then finished up and was like, Diane, I don't think that's for me.
Right. He's tried it. He's given it a shot. But he's just happy to...
Yeah.
He's just happy to vibe.
Yeah. But Harry Truman, on the other hand, Harry Truman fucks.
Also, speaking of people who fuck but have platonic life partners, the Doctor and Donna Noble.
Yes.
I mean, like, if they were allowed to continue to be...
They would have been Doctor and Companion until the end of time. No joke there intended.
They play off each other so well.
It's so good.
So well.
And they're platonic, but, like, that's... They're not going to do anything more than that, and that's exactly where they need to be. Like, that's what they need. And it's even, like, when she goes with the Doctor, that's what he says. It's like, I just want a mate. Just, I need someone to be with me and call me on my shit and have fun times with me. And
So, platonic life partner is... God, I love it so much. I love it so much because I think that platonic relationships are underexplored sometimes in media. And yet, oftentimes, it's a thin line because on the one hand, platonic relationships are underexplored. On the other hand, yep. a lot of gay relationships are portrayed as mm-hmm. they were just friends.
Yeah.
Just gals being pals.
And there is like technically a nuance to this of like there's platonic life partners and then there's another trope called heterosexual life partners that's usually like two men, two women, right? Like that. However, mm-hmm. I feel like it can all just be thrown under the same umbrella. Yeah, that's the line, is like there is not enough men and women just being cool friends, and there yeah. is too much clearly gay individuals just yeah. being cool friends.
Yeah. Oh, one of the things that I include in this a little bit is in BoJack Horseman, Diane and BoJack are just good friends. They give it a shot one point. They're not life partners, but or like even BoJack and Mr. Peanut Butter. BoJack and Todd live together.
Mm-hmm.
BoJack and Todd live together. Todd is canonically ace, BoJack does his own thing, and yet they're kind of inseparable.
Right. You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. 100%.
It's great. Speaking of which, Todd, one of the few actual like ace representations
yes.
in TV, which is pretty exciting.
Yes. One of my favorite examples of this trope, and this is such like a mainstream example, but like
mm-hmm.
is Liz Lemon and Jack Donaghy on 30 Rock.
Yes. Yes.
They are one of my favorite versions of this because they directly in the show talk about like they're the will they won't they, where it's very clearly they won't, however
right.
we're gonna keep talking yes. about it and joking yes. about it, and like they don't even have like they don't even ever like romantically kiss on accident. They kiss right. once that I can remember, and it's to cover something up, like
yep.
Jack kisses yep. his mother-in-law at an event, and then like Liz is just like, that's how he says goodbye to all of his friends, and then they have to like kit, right? It's one of those where it's like
yep
it's
yep, yep.
so good.
Yes,
like, and there's, sorry, I'm gonna keep talking for a second. There's
no,
a,
please,
there's,
go,
a
go.
There's a quote from that show where, so the do you want, you watch 30 Rock? Yes.
I've seen a few episodes.
Okay.
I'm not an avid follower.
The HR guy's name is Mr. Wienerslave.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he Jack and Liz accidentally get married one time, and he has to take them to marriage counseling because technically he's her boss, right? They're just trying to like get a divorce, but it's difficult because it's a television show. And I think his like quote here is like the best defining thing for like platonic life partners is, have you spent time with each other's families? Have you attended special events together, such as class reunions, birthday or holiday celebrations, weddings or extended car trips? Are you each other's emergency contact? Do you ever drink together at work, perhaps while summarizing what you've learned over the day or week? Have you ever shared intimate details of your fears, hopes, and dreams, both personal and professional? Is this the longest and perhaps most meaningful relationship of your life? Do you often find yourself thinking the same thing and then saying it at the exact same time? And then they both turn to each other and they're like, I have to tell you something. But I think like that quote very much summarizes just like, yeah, you're each other's person, but not like that.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of each other's person, there are many, many, many more.
Hit me with another number.
All right, we've got number 57.
Ooh, this is the
end.
This is the Yes Man.
Oh, the Yes
this
Man.
This is the Yes Man.
Oh,
a yes great man. Assistant provides their boss with the things they need to do their job. This can mean an organized schedule, up-to-date research, fielding calls, or taking on the small tasks. For some assistants, it means flattering and generally blowing smoke up the posterior areas of their superior. This is the domain of the Yes Man.
Yeah, so I mean, LeFou would definitely,
oh,
from Beauty and the Beast, come under this one.
Mm-hmm.
Wormtail would go under this one, which is kind of an interesting thing to be like, he's the Yes Man.
Wiggins in Pocahontas.
Yes. Yeah, all of these kind of like sniveling follower types.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because you also see it a lot in corporate America.
Ooh, got him.
Got him.
Get him. Get him, Annalie.
Going for the throat. There are just people who are just like, why, yes, boss, yes, boss. Boss, of course, boss. And I'm like, well, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
We're all dying here. Let's not pretend.
There's one of these, sorry, this is a weird reference, but there's one of these guys in Coneheads.
Ooh.
Did you ever watch Coneheads?
No.
I was forced to watch Coneheads with my family. And basically, there's this dude who, like, works for a detective. And, like, with this detective, he is the yes, sir, anything, sir, you've told me, like, of course, sir, you're much better than this, sir. There's no reason they should be making you do this, sir, right? And then anytime someone wants to, like, bring, like, a piece of evidence to the detective, he's like, he's having a bad day, let me give it to him so you don't get the flag. Sir, I found something you might be interested in, right? And so they eventually get, like, taken by, like, aliens, right? They go to, like, Remulac, and literally on this alien planet where he's about to get, like, his boss is about to get murdered, he, like, goes up to, like, the head alien, and he's like, these people do not know how to handle things around here. Let me do it for you. I found something you might, and just immediately starts yes-manning, like, the king of all these aliens in the exact same way, and just, like, gets in. It's, I love him.
They're always the ones who survive. They're always the ones who make it to the end. They're always the ones who can cozy up to the people in charge.
This is why I play lawful evil clerics.
Oh.
In D&D. Because you can't get rid of me. You need me. You haven't got another healer.
I kind of like that grown attached to the yes man. The big bad evil person kind of grows attached to the yes man who follows them around.
Yeah. You know?
Being like, I don't need anybody, I'm fine. And then being like, well, I guess you can come along if you want. You don't have to, but, you know, come along, it's fine.
You don't have to, but, like, I wish you would.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Having a bit of a heart for the person who you thought was just annoying, but it's, like, begrudging liking.
Who else would follow you to the ends of the earth?
Exactly. Next is number 16. We're keeping this moving.
Number 16 is the damsel in distress.
Oh. I've literally written articles on this trope. So I'm just going
to give it to me.
Well, I'm going to rein it in a little bit. Damsel in distress, I've usually kind of approached from the perspective of, like, objectification of women specifically. I've done a lot of research recently into the extreme of damsel in distress, which is the dead damsel, like, full objectification of women.
Fridged wife, baby.
Oh yes. It's very, very common in media. But we're going to rein that all in, put it in a little box, and we're going to say damsel in distress as a sidekick. I mean, Zelda in
Zelda very much is this.
Is damsel in distress, but she becomes kind of more in later games. She gains agency a little bit later. There will usually be, especially in video games, like a level or two that they'll toss to the damsel in distress where she comes along and is usually a healer or a little bit more competent than
usual. Or magic.
Always
the girls magic. Always be out here doing magic.
Always be out here doing magic. Doing, like, usually, like, support magic, buffing magic. Or usually your girl partner will be kidnapped.
Yes, absolutely. Wendy from Peter Pan. She is sidekick and damsel in distress. So is, I would argue, Tinkerbell.
Yes. She becomes the damsel in distress sidekick when she is kidnapped by Hook.
Kida from Atlantis is also this, where, like, she is a fully competent, realized character.
Oh, yeah.
However, she does go whoop into a big crystal.
And that's, like, a pretty common thing that happens, is they'll establish the women long enough to be competent and, like, interesting enough for the protagonist to fall in love with them, and then they whisk them off to
and
some
then they
sort
go
of
whoop into a big crystal.
They go whoop into a big crystal.
Have you heard of King Arthur?
Yes, but I want to hear more.
So the sexiest book I've ever, this is not a joke, I'm not doing a bit. If you want to be horned out of your mind, please read Knight of the Cart by Chrétien de Troyes. It is Lancelot's origin story, or, like, rather how he, like, joined King Arthur's court. And in it, this dude, Meliagant, shows up to King Arthur's court and is like, fight me, and fight me, and if I win, I'll take your wife. And if not, then you can keep your wife. And Arthur's like, what? I don't fucking think I'll do that, thanks. What if I just don't, and then I keep my wife and you leave? And then Kay, the Seneschal, who's a bitch and who I hate, thinks to himself, oh, it's dishonorable to turn this down. Wouldn't someone be a big hero if they did fight this man for Guinevere? And so he, like, takes Guinevere in the woods, and then Meliagant kidnaps her because, you know, fuck you, I guess.
Yep.
And then Sir Gawain has to go after her, and then obviously Lancelot goes after her of his own accord, and then eventually, you know, becomes part of the court. It's very, oh boy, Lancelot. But The whole bit in this is like, she is implied to be so fully competent, but only participates enough to just be like a nuisance.
And that's kind of like the real like thing that like gets under your skin about this trope.
Yeah.
Jasmine from Aladdin.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
shown to be fully competent, very regal, very independent. She gets kidnapped. Pirates of the Caribbean. I feel like we gotta move to the next one because I could spend so long on Damsel in Distress.
Yeah, Damsel might need its own minisode. Yeah.
The subversions, the implications, like the varying degrees of Damsel in Distress could have a whole thing. So yeah. We're gonna move on to number 11.
Number 11 is the confidant. The sidekick who is the only person the hero confides in.
Oh, interesting. So I'm thinking right away, this might be a little bit also Yes Man, but Floop and Minion from Spy Kids.
Oh my god.
Yep.
I mean, yeah.
Because, well, I mean, and so this is a bit further along that, in that, like, Minion is a little bit manipulative. And doing his own thing. But Floop is the one who's just like, oh, my show needs something and I don't know what it is. And Minion's just like, I'm here. I'm listening. Don't you fret none.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
This is why Igor exists in Frankenstein adaptations.
Yes. Victor needs
someone to just like talk to.
Yeah. Somebody to have. I mean, a little bit Doofenshmirtz and Perry. They're not.
Oh, 100%.
Really, but he gets to tell his whole spiel to and feels kind of lost when they're not together.
Speaking of platonic life partners, Doofenshmirtz and Perry the Platypus.
Partners. A lot of these have lovely overlap. We're moving to the next one, 26, go.
26 is the Lancer. Okay, so the Lancer, this is part of, like, the five-man band thing. So, like, you know how, like, you have your set of five heroes. You have your leader, your Lancer, big guy, smart guy, and the chick, right? That's, like, the five-man band, usually.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So your Lancer is your hero's primary foil.
Oh, interesting.
So you're the Han Solo to your Luke Skywalker.
Right, right.
So, like, still on the same team, still good friends, mm-hmm. but they're opposite.
Mm-hmm.
This is, Kay is this to King Arthur a lot of the times. Mm. Lancelot is this to King Arthur. Lance, the Lancer, it's a whole thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Hamlet and Horatio, again, speaking of platonic life partners.
Oh, yeah. Spock and Kirk.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. There's always, like, a little bit of, like, a twinge of the hero and then, like, a little bit more of the bad person.
Exactly. No, that's why. It's usually your foil to your leader in a five-man band.
Yes, 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 yes.
Mercutio to Romeo is this.
We're going on to number 46.
Number 46 is going to be the Squire, the sidekick to a knight.
Oh,
yeah, baby. This is the King Arthur episode.
Gosh.
Hey, baby. This also is another a Star Wars thing. You have your Padawans to your Jedi Masters, and you have your Sith apprentices to the Sith Lords.
Yes, 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 yes. One thing that I immediately think of is in A Knight's Tale with the lead of Heath Ledger. There's like his two kind of friend/squire people who follow him around, usually play like comedic side characters. There's, for some reason, I think immediately of a very small bit scene in Over the Garden Wall where there's just like, this is the page boy and like the man, and he just tugs him on a rope or something like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? In the Dark Lantern, Tales from the Dark Lantern, he's just like pulls a child on a rope.
I know that this doesn't count, but Turkey Boy from A Christmas Carol.
Honestly, though, I bet Turkey Boy would be a great squire.
Oh, he'd be a kick-ass squire.
We love
Roll squires. That die.
Also, God. I know you haven't seen Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Game of Thrones.
Well, there is this character named Podrick. And he is a sweet
Podrick.
Podrick. His name's Podrick, and he's the sweetest, best, most competent squire, loyal as hell. I love him more than life itself.
His name can't be Podrick.
He canonically fucks. He canonically fucks real well.
All squires canonically fuck unless they're children.
Unless they're children.
Are you saying that Smee does not fuck?
Oh, Smee absolutely fucks. Speaking of fucks, 39. I hope this turns out well.
Well, it's actually rude hero, nice sidekick. So it does work.
Man. man.
You know something that fucks is this.
Oh, man. Oh, man. So, John Sims?
Yeah. Yeah. Although fucking Martin is mean as shit.
Oh, yeah. No, but that's the thing. Like, Martin is not, like, it's not...
He's the rude hero. I just want to say.
It's not mean and nice. It's polite and rude. And that's Martin fair. Is very polite. And John Sims is very rude. And
is very rude.
And even though I think, like, in actual practice, Jonathan Sims is way nicer than Martin, who's got a lot of, like, dark meanness to
him. Oh, yeah, he's got a lot of shit going on there. He's got some stuff to work through.
Oh, yes.
This also, in a really weird example of this, do you remember the Sam and Cat show?
Yes, 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 yes.
Sam and Cat are this.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, yes. They love, this is such a classic bit. Full Metal Alchemist, Alphonse and Edward.
Again, Sherlock and John.
Again, Sherlock and John.
In Sky High, it's usually implied that, like, you have a hero who kind of sucks, and then, like, your sidekick who's, like,
always, like, the person who is driven towards a goal, and then the sidekick who can be like, hey, I'm sorry for my friend being a dick, but you need them, so.
So, like, Shrek and Donkey.
Oh my god. Oh my god. You're right. You are right. Shrek and Donkey. Yeah. Oh, and speaking of Shrek and Donkey, perhaps, I'm not sure, 29?
Oh yeah, let's hit 29. 29 is non-human sidekick. So there's a couple examples of this.
Literally Shrek and Donkey. Oh, God's so, on my side.
So, fairy companion, gratuitous animal sidekick, robot buddy, snarky non-human sidekick, talking appliance sidekick, virtual sidekick.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So we have, in order, Tinkerbell.
Oh, yeah.
Donkey and Mushu. Jarvis. Virtual Karen from Spider-Man. Hit me with one more number and we'll close out.
All right. Let's round out with my personal favorite, number 7. I don't actually know if it's my personal favorite.
Are you lock in that this is your personal favorite?
This is my personal favorite.
The Caretaker.
Oh, no.
A sidekick who dedicates themselves to taking care of someone else. Martin, Samwise, Ganji, Annalee, would you like to take the lead?
No! Oh my god.
Could be a parent, spouse, sibling,
god.
Your Ophelia, your squishy wizard.
God.
Go on and tell us about this one.
So I have a very specific pet peeve because okay, so you know Samwise Ganji, the sweetest, best person in
most important
most but that's the thing, it's always the specialist special boy and then their emotional support person, so that's like John Sims,
Frodo.
Exactly. So
boy with cool eyes and then boy who doesn't have cool eyes,
exactly, who just trails along and has to be like the squishiest, most self-sacrificing, like lighting themselves on fire for the good of the group person. And
Ronald Weasley.
Like literally.
Grover.
These people who nobody cares about who they are, they just care about what they do for the main character, which is just a glorification of the manic pixie dream girl trope. But for fantasy, for adventure, it bothers me so much that these characters are reduced to their chronic morbid selflessness. And I don't like it because
yep.
I find it deeply insulting that people are like, I only give a shit about you in relation to what you do for me. I'm like,
yep.
No. No. I have a special indignance towards the treatment of these characters.
Yes.
For instance, in the Lord of the Ring movies, in the books, Samwise Ganji becomes a ring bearer at some point.
Yes, he does.
He thinks that Frodo is dead. He grabs the ring and is like, I'm so sad that my friend is dead. I'm gonna go off and finish this quest myself. He becomes a ring bearer. It's one of the reasons why he can move on the magic elf ship at the end, because he was a ring bearer, and they cut that out of the movie because they need him to be nothing so that Frodo can be something. But in the end, it is his mercy for Smeagol that
yes.
saves the day. And in the end, Frodo can't toss the ring into the volcano. He can't toss the ring into Mount Doom.
Nope.
because he's nothing. And Samwise Gamgee is everything in the end. Sorry, I've just got so many feelings about this.
It's a very important trope. It's a very important trope. It's so good. And when it gets subverted last minute...
I just love it when nobody is actually that special.
Yeah.
Like Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Wrinkle in Time, special boy.
Special boy is nothing.
Exactly. And I remember reading special that
Special boy
as
is
kid.
Nothing. Your sister. Fuck
your
you.
Sister was something.
Because she's normal.
I remember reading that as a kid and getting so frustrated because I'm just like, why is he just the specialist special boy? I would be so jealous if I was. But then it ends up like getting subverted at the end, you know?
Yeah, she is it. And it's also inversely, for example, like the Doctor Who quote of like 900 years of time and space and I've never met someone who's not important. Like, it's not that everyone's unimportant. It's just like everyone's just like got their own shit.
Exactly. I just have a visceral dislike for the specialist special boy, which is why I like Doctor Who.
And the fact that you're like the doctor. But in the end, it is the companions that do it.
Oh,
it really is. He whips out all his special boy tricks. And look, it's very important in some of these scenarios that he was there. Okay? I'm not going to be like, the doctor doesn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, it is having human companions with him that makes things happen. And they're not special. They're just people.
Yep.
But they are.
Yes.
And that's why I hate Clara.
Yeah, because she's like the specialist.
She's special!
Because she's, I don't want people who are special. I
want Rose Tyler, shop girl, to just.
I want Rose Tyler, I want Martha, I want Donna, I want people who are just mundane, who end up being so remarkable.
Extraordinary.
Exactly. I want to feel like I could run with a doctor and have a good time, you know?
Yes.
And speaking of running with people and having a good time, I hope that you enjoyed sprinting along to this rapid fire tropes round. That was the sidekick.
That was the sidekick trope going into subtropes. We're going to try and do more of these mini-sodes and even, like, movie episodes, and that we're going to release during the off weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a trope that you think is particularly dense, like the sidekick trope, obviously we didn't get to every single variant, email it to us at genreblindpodcast@gmail.com or send it to our Instagram, also at genreblindpodcast. Or if you have a particular, like, movie that you want us to watch and just fucking
and just terrified.
every trope in that motherfucker, take it out. We're gonna start doing those for the off weeks.
We are still taking movie suggestions, so if you truly have a movie, DM us, email us, let us know.
So that's gonna conclude this episode. Now back to the Island of Misfit Toys. I'd like to talk about the Toy Taker.